and started out like this and now is doing that. So I just think it's wonderful. Montreal is as rich of cultural stories and historical backgrounds like that, and so that we need to know more about who contributed and how, and you know, to what extent, and because of such and such artist or such and such DJ music player. And that's another thing, there's not a lot. I want to know about more about DJs and producers, because we have had a ton over the years and there are still many. So what were their stories, you know? And so that would be interesting to get into that as well, because they're you know, it's an extension. It's a, it's
And you know, we're talking about Pud Chilling, and we're and on that, on the strength of, you know, the producer behind that, I find that to be a really, you know, sad but interesting story at the same time with Jean-Luc Rimet. You know, the fact that he produced 75% of Armageddon and then passed away right before
Yeah, the
the, you know,
launch, the actual.
and there is a weird link between you and him and his Mellow Man group before even, it's like, so I guess before you even hooked up with La Gamique, you were an extra in a video.
Again, that summer. I think between the ages of 15 and 18, a lot of this stuff happened into there. I was with some girlfriends. I think a Saturday afternoon, it's the summer, and then you know, one girlfriend says, "Hey, they're looking for extras in a video that's going to be shot in Verdun." So they're like, "Verdun? Okay, let's make it happen." Because you know, mind you, we living all the way up in the east, and so
Just getting that
Verdun is all
metro.
the way, yeah, like all the way up from the Green Line to the absolute, you know. So we show up there, and you know, it's like we're not sure, we don't know, because we've never heard of the group. So we get over there. Well, you know, we checking out the vibe. So this is outside, and two young black guys singing R&B, jazzy R&B, like pop, but it's in French. So this is this group called Meloman.
I just handed Scandal a Mellow Man
Yes.
record.
Oh my God. Meloman. Oh shit. Sorry.
It's all right.
Okay, he just threw me completely off. And so yeah, little did I know, we're shooting that video, we're in there, we're just, you know, extras.
Wasn't for that song,
It
though.
wasn't for that song, yeah, because I remember it was a different cover for
Yeah, I
the
think
other
that's a little bit
album.
earlier too, but
But these guys were huge in France. They were huge in France, and so having a big group like that come out to Montreal and shoot a video, and then 3 years later, I am rapping on a song that one of the artists here produced. So again, stars are in line.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Again, dots connected, and wow, this is huge. This is huge. Thank you for showing me this.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So yeah, so that's, it's basically, you know, the whole, you know, history of events.
And did you, 'cause from my understanding, there were some beats like Pud Chilling, Move On, those were chosen from like a demo tape that Rain Man had gotten from Vincent Aigret. Like those are like chosen beats, and then Jean-Luc Rimet came to Montreal to produce a couple other things in
Oh,
studio.
see, I wasn't
So
sure about how he came about,
okay.
and you just brought
And
me a piece of
Vincent
that.
Aigret is the link. So he was doing some sort of you might have produced the video for like the Mellow Man
I
video.
think he did, you're right,
And
now that
then
I
he was
think of
also
it.
doing
The
all the
music part,
management
yes,
stuff
all the
with
management stuff.
So I think that
Correct.
was the link between everything. And then so I was gonna ask you if you got to meet Jean-Luc Rimet when he came down to Montreal in those studio sessions or whatever you remember from that.
I think that I don't remember. I think I remember that at the video shoot at that time, we had spoken shortly because, you know, we were taking a lot of breaks. It was very hot that day. I remember that while they were shooting that video. And I think that, you know, from I know, from one sister to another, and the brothers, you know, we would ask like where were they from and ask a few questions, but no more, because I think it was very brief. But during the Rain Man period, and while we were recording, I don't remember, recall having met them, either one or the other. Maybe they had come down, maybe, you know, with Vincent, but not at the studio level. Everything was done at a distance from what I remember. Or maybe, you know, Yuri eventually could fill in the blanks, because we did have a lot of writing sessions and we would be up late at the studio. But I don't remember having, you know, like right on the top of my head like that, having Close Encounter or having working directly with Jean-Luc.
I think he said that he, Yuri said that even like, I think he said that for an example, I think La Vache, like Rain Men, or they had kind of like made a really not as good sounding beat, but Jean-Luc came and kind of remade their idea.
And they loved it. I remember how that was one of their favorite songs to to perform. They loved performing Oh La Vache because the beat was like different off, but there was a bass line on that track. And I think that that's what they enjoyed the most. And the bass was so loud, they couldn't hear themselves sing anymore. And they loved the whole vibe of the crowd, because Rain Men, again, were the only dudes rapping hard.
There was supposed to be a video for A La Vache, I think. That was supposed
again,
to be
a lot of the details.
That was supposed to be a third video, I think, split with another track. I forget which track. But I think it was going to be like a split video. A La Vache was supposed to be the third video. Listen, and it didn't come. Something with management didn't work out. And I
think they loved it, because the core, the hook would go, Oh La Vache, les flous on arrache. And it was very, it was a huge statement. It was loud. It was rowdy. They loved performing that song. You know, I remember these guys, good times.
I want to see that whole album performed.
You know what? I think that what would be cool is to have a kind of 90s tour, you know, because I think that nostalgia is very powerful. And at the same time, generationally speaking, like, you know, for cats our age,
you have to pass that on.
You know, I think that that would be, you know, who would be on the bandwagon? I'm sure SP would be on the bandwagon. We'd have to get Mazayan up in there.
Yeah.
Mazayan, you know, that was the great era.
Everybody should.
That beginning.
That would be an amazing show. It'd be like a kind of like a Quebec Rock the Bells.
Yeah.
Montreal Rock the Bells type of thing.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
And I know that we could fill stadiums and crowds, because again, the music has reached everyone. Mm-hmm. If little to, you know, it's reached so many communities, so many people. And this was the era where we were all, or some of us, you know, we were still in school. So we were in high school, but I remember the younger generation, you know, people, you know, were in elementary and grew up on Pachiling and, you know, watching the video on, because, you know, there weren't a lot of black groups
in that
on
video.
Music.
You know, you got away with something in that video that all the other hip hop videos were not getting away with. Like, all the other hip hop videos were censored, but Pudchilling was not censored. So you were cursing.
Yes.
And it was not censored. And I was like, oh, wow, you're she's getting away with it.
Right.
They haven't caught on to the fact that she's actually swearing right now.
You're right. But I think it's because.
And it would make me laugh because, you know, I'm a little kid just like, you know, like watching that.
And I was, wow.
But I caught on. But I caught on because I was paying attention to hip hop. You know what I mean?
But, you know, I never caught up on that.
You got away with it.
Oh, my God. Yo, shout out. Big up to you. Shoot. You are so right.
I remember that. I think about that, and I see you in the white sweatsuit and just thinking like, oh, wow, she's cursing right now, and she's not getting censored. And it's because she's on a French track.
And I'm
and
a
it's
girl.
On Music Plus,
probably.
And they're just,
likely,
they just,
yeah,
they're not,
just
they flew. Just, they didn't even pay attention to her.
I don't
her.
Even think
you know what
they,
I, mean? Like,
I think that.
And
well,
I was like, I was like, good for her.
So yeah. I guess, again, the first to maybe get away with that.
Because that didn't fly after, you know, anything coming from the States, they would run her.
That's true. You know? That's true. But you know what I found out? And again, it's I'm glad you brought that up, because at that time, it was very controlled, eh? And apparently, the guy who was in charge of the musical, you know, whatever they would play on TV and hip hop and, you know, everything that had to do with hip hop, he didn't like hip hop. He hated it. So if that was able to go on, I think that they played it out well in the sense that there's a marketing strategy. It's clean. It's nice. It's smooth. It's mellow. It's not hardcore. There's no, you know, they wanted hip hop to stay very controlled in terms of the sound, in terms of the image. And so they weren't too inclined about having the same kind of, you know, image about rap in the United States. And, you know, they were very, you know, they had like preconceived ideas, and they figured, well, hey, if it's going on down there in the States, we don't want that stuff over here. And, you know, I remember what that did as well, because it was very hard for some American artists to come here and have shows. And, you know, they always thought that at a rap show, there was going to be like some noise, and they would, you know, so at that time, they wanted to make sure that it was very, very controlled. So if Pachilin could play, and it was a rap song, and it had English, and I got to play uncensored, then I think it had a winning strategy. It was the ticket. It was, I think, yeah, I think now that we think back, it definitely opened the door, because they let that English slide by with the French folk.
Was it ever on, I don't know why my brain's telling me to say that, but remember Combat des Clips? When they'd have like...
Yes, yes.
Was it like, ever on that?
Not that I recall.
Okay.
So we would have to put somebody on that. Yeah, I'll ask who.
Ask Yuri, maybe he'll remember. Yes. Yeah.
Because there has to be
Why that just popped into my brain.
There has to be some footage of that. You know, there has to be, you know, we can find that out, especially nowadays. Well,
whoever has that VHS, you know, and we got to get... please let me borrow that VHS.
Or I wonder, like, how do you go back to television archives? You know? So
it's about who...
I'd have to holler at Malik Shahid.
Yeah, who owns Music Plus and who's got all those, because...
Yeah, and Music Plus is a whole different agenda now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So. About three owners later, it's like, where is stuff, you know?
Well, hey, internet. Yeah. So we don't need television anymore.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, of course.
So how is that, you know, we talked a bit about the reaction of Pachilin, the video, hearing it just in public, people stopping you randomly. But you guys went on to do a lot of performances. You talked about the Francofolie. What other touring and performances do you remember?
I remember Francofolie 1998. There was... Cream 98, which was a huge, huge show at the Olympic Stadium. So I think Cream was like a combination. Maybe, okay, mind you, I have not gone to a Coachella show, but I think we can compare it to the early, you know, to Coachella, because it was one big place, many different stages, different shows, and types of music for everybody. It's like one big old rave party, but it's got rap in it.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what, and you know, at that time they were working with French groups because they went to France, Rain Man. So they had a track that they did with La FF, Funky Family, were huge.
La Clica, Passy.
Stummy Bugsy, Oxmo. They had huge French rap artists on that album, and so that was a show I will always remember, because it's very impressive. You know, you've got thousands and thousands and thousands of people. It's like it's never going to end. And the Francofolie in 1998 was the same feel. You're outside on a stage. Again, I have no... Well, we did have some stage practice, but we were 18, like, fresh out of high school.
And this is Francofolie in...
Francofolie in Montreal.
Yeah.
So, Francofolie in Montreal, I got to do with them. They did Francofolie also in La Rochelle in France. And then I did Cream 98 with them. There was a series of a lot of... You know, because we went on tour that same year, so we toured in high schools. We toured in Quebec, everywhere in Quebec for that whole year. So it was a very, very busy year and just great memories and just, you know, fans, you know, like the pandemonium, it's crazy. And that's exactly what it was. Like, they had girls ripping their shirts. And, you know, I was cool with everybody. I was hanging with them. I was rolling with them. And I remember, because, you know, we used to go like very far outside of Quebec as well. So you had these French speaking young kids who would rhyme my part in English. And they would tell you, "Je connais toutes les paroles de ta chanson." And that was it with Rain Man. They knew not only the song, the words to Pachiling, they knew the words to every single one of their songs. Mm. And it was just mind-boggling. And the energy and the vibe. And I think they spent hours after each show just signing autographs. And people would have the merchandise. So again, it was very rare to have a group at that time. They had t-shirts, they had stickers, vinyls, like cords or listen, it was fantastic. It was like, oh man, the Rain Man era. So they just wanted you to sign every little bit of piece of paper item that they had that said Rain Man. And that's all they wanted. And it was very difficult at that time because, you know, they had cell phones, but they weren't intelligent. So whoever had a camera. And so it was very rare, you know, and I don't remember us taking a lot of pictures. I do remember that at some shows, Musique Plus came, and they did a lot of interviews. So, you know, and you know, the best part is I was touring with my idols because I was touring with the best group in Montreal. I was touring with my idols. I love what they stood for. I love what they wrote, what they spoke about, how they rapped it. I love their intelligent minds. I love the hardcore outcome.
So you're benefiting from life, not just music.
Oh yes, absolutely. I got to tour with my idols, and I would wait backstage because, you know, they would always do Pachiling last. And I was happy about that because I got to enjoy the show just vibe. Like everybody else backstage waiting for me to go on. And I would just sit there like a little girl gazing and dazed. And I would sing the words to their songs as well. And this was my, you know, they taught me and we taught each other. So these were lessons of life. So they were advanced. You know, they were trendsetters again. They were advanced. They were very highly intelligent, highly conscious. And, you know, it's important for me to say because at that point we were very aware of our times. We were aware of the political and social, dilemmas, problematics that we would go through as young Black kids. Living in Quebec, the French, the English, the cultural, the politics, we were very aware of our environment. But we needed to transcend, or should I say, you know, more Rain Man. They knew how to, they wanted to pass down a message and transcend the knowledge. And they just wanted you to be aware. And, you know, we considered ourselves 5%ers. And it's truly what we were. And again, it was just they made a very powerful statement at that time. They were very powerful as a group. And lyrically speaking, the French album as the English album. And it was just Rain Man. They had it all. They were complete. And, you know, I forgot to mention, we toured with DJ Blast. Hmm. So we toured with DJ Blast, which was, again, it was complete because you had Rain Man rapping in French, rapping in English. You had the DJ that was the number one DJ. You had the girl that was, people thought I was from the States, but that was just around the corner. Okay. So I think people were just in awe. And it really, what it's what it was, you know, they weren't, I don't think.
And people felt like it was their own too, because there wasn't a lot of Montreal, Quebec hip hop to look up to, you know, when you checked out Music Plus at that time, you did not even have five groups that had things out.
Very, very limited.
And that's just the way that things were at the time.
Yeah, very limited, very controlled. And I think they felt about... Rain Man how I felt watching TV, looking at these rap music videos in the U.S. You know, I wanted to be there with the man with the Big Daddy Canes, and you just wanted to be there. I wanted to be with Gangstar. I wanted to be with Rakim. I just wanted to be there. So many artists, so many great artists. So I get it now, you know, of what the impact and the effect that it has. You know, just like I was watching my idols perform while the fans were watching Rain Man.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was unique. It was special. Yeah. It was huge.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. So after Rain Man, what happened with music, what happened with the scandal name, and having to go over to the name, using the name Sabrina Jean, and talk about what happened afterwards.
So we've toured for a year, and on that last year, we all finished school, we graduated, yay, everybody's happy. The tour was amazing, and once the tour finished, I got pregnant. So they were supposed to go on a tour, and I couldn't be a part of it. It's not that I couldn't be a part of the tour. I just didn't think I was necessary to be on the tour because it was Rain Man and I was ready to be a mom and do my mom thing. And so a couple of years from that, mind you, this is 98 from 99. My first son is born in 99. And then between 99 and 2004, 2005, I made a comeback. I made a comeback as Sabrina Jean. Why? Because I was associated with Glamour Life Records, who at the time were... Glamour Life was, before there was a music label, they were a entertainment industry. So they were party promoters. So they would put up big parties and have a few artists, appear at their parties. And, you know, they were... promoters for parties. And so they decided to go into music, and the strategy behind Glamour Life Records is that they had three different artists. So they had South Squad, shout out, because South Squad again was one of the major trendsetting also and first rap groups here in Montreal, Quebec, but they were from the South Shore. So you know, they were one of the first as well to start up and have they came out with several albums, but their first album, Five Mics, made a lot of noise. So South Squad was very popular as a group in Montreal. And then you had SNC, Star and Crescent. So they were, there was Khalif, there was Nine, and there was Crime X. So they were... For the most part, you know, a conscious political street rap. And, you know, they had a few members in there who were a part of the Nation of Islam. Rap, English, Anglophone groups. So Star and Crescent, they were three young men's rapping in English only. And then there was me, Sabrina Jean, formerly known as Scandal. So the whole idea, and mind you, South Squad was also known because they were French rappers, but they could also rap in English. So they had a force that was a very, very strong skill set at that time, because you could flip it in both ways. But, you know, you had to keep it more French than you did English. But a lot of us could relate to both types of rap.
Yeah.
So they just put it in there and it worked out very well for them. So much so that we decided to come up with a concept where Glamour Life was going to be the record label. And we decided to make an album where we would be three different groups on that same album to give the chance to every group to hit the market, either French or English, and whoever would get signed would have the chance at having a bigger record deal. So this was an independent label owned by two cousins who put their money together and who just basically pushed us. And, you know, they helped us, you know, with the beats. And you had, you know, one of the members in South Squad who would make the beats actually from his basement at home. So that would be like a huge plus. And then he would make the beats for the rest of us. So he pretty much produced the whole album Mines, Diamond Mines album himself with a few collaborations. And then, you know, we went on to mixtapes and so on and so forth. So that was the initial plan, to put all three separate groups on one album and to hit the market with that, which is one of the reasons why eventually we went to Toronto to promote it, because what we wanted to do as well is hit the English market, which you didn't have, because French was, you know, it was French, Quebec, and there was only that French market. But how do we get to the English market? So the closest English market would be Toronto. And so I did three singles on that album, and each group had a couple of singles. And I think there was a total of 9 to 11 songs on that album, which, again, I thought was another door opener, because you did not have albums. You know, you had Rain Men, who did the French album and they did the English album. Diamond Mines was a French and English album throughout the whole album, and mm-hmm. sometimes on the songs, which was the force of South Squad, because they had three cats or two rapping in French, English. So you always had that mix, that combo.
Kind of like Muzayan a little
exactly. bit. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You know, kind of in that same field. And, you know, you had Sabrina Jean. So the reason why I could not continue with Scandal is because Scandal, the way I wrote it with a K, they said, you know, for copyright infringement and stuff like that, you know, you have to be careful, because there was still a group. There was an 80s rock group that was called Scandal that was still out there and very, very popular. So we had to be careful with that, knowing that we wanted to hit the market and we want to, you know, come out with an album and declare the songs. And, you know, we just wanted to do things right. So,
and not hear anything from anybody. So.
Well, yeah. You know, for the most part, you know, that was the whole, the main idea. So, starting from that, what we did is, okay. So I said, you know what, it'll give me a chance to, you know, to break out of Petchiling a bit, you know, break out a bit out of Rain Man, try to, you know, come back. Through a different identity, same artist, just, you know, so I tried to, you know, flip it, because I said, well, okay, wow, Scandal fitted perfectly. My name is Sabrina. How can I use, you know, what kind of name could I have without dissociating myself completely with who I am? But, you know, so I went with Sabrina Jean, because part of my, you know, name has Jean in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought
Haitian.
There you go. And so I thought that, you know, it was, I thought that Sabrina Jean had a nice ring to it, kind of like Billie Jean. And, you know, I just thought it sounded like, oh, it's catchy, it's groovy, it's nice, it's chill. Okay, so let's go with Sabrina Jean. So that's where Scandal could not continue as Scandal. And then, you know, around 2003.
And then Wyclef took you to court. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, that would have been a whole other issue. I would have changed my name right there.
What was the decision to say Jean instead of saying Jean?
Because I rap in English.
Okay.
So I wanted to have that English vibe still English feel. Because I didn't feel you could relate to Jean if I rapped in English. I don't know. I just thought it sounded better.
I hear you.
I just thought it sounded better to stay in that English vibe.
Yep.
So it was a great experience. doing the diamond mines. I got to go. So not everybody, like South Squad didn't go. So in 2004, I got to do the Mark Echo show in Toronto. So big show in Toronto where all of the Canadian artists went, and there was a lot of American artists. So, there was Mos Def, Fat Joe, Ciara, Nas, Busta Rhymes, Kanye West. So it was a big, big show. Yeah. And so, you know, I got to go over there and do my thing, and I got to take a couple of pictures, and it was just, it was amazing. I got to meet Nas. I got to take a picture with him, and it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. I got to meet Julie Black. What an incredible, beautiful personality. She's so real. She's so down to earth. I've always been a fan of Julie Black's as well.
She's hip hop.
Oh man, she's hip hop. She's R&B. She's us. She's everything, man. I absolutely love her. So that was an amazing highlight. I got this close to meeting Fat Joe, but he had bodyguards bigger than him. So I kind of stayed away. And I think, you know, he made sure, because I saw Fat Joe take pictures with every guy, like, you know, a fan. But when it came to me, and I was like, you know, I wasn't hoochie or nothing. I came to rap, and I just wanted a picture. Because Fat Joe, I mean, since 92, I grew up on Fat Joe. Is that, you know what I'm saying? I just wanted to flow with Joe just for a couple of seconds and just take a picture.
Yeah.
And it didn't turn out so good. So I had to stop chasing for a picture, because I said, well, he's taking pictures with everybody else except me. So maybe he at the time didn't want to take a picture with the girls, because I think he was married, or I don't know. It's what I figure. But everybody got to take a picture with Fat Joe except me or every other girl. So I don't know. I'll leave it at that. But I was very disappointed about that. I tried to take a picture with Busta Rhymes. That was very, very, very difficult, because at that time what they had explained to us is you can't look at Busta Rhymes, you can't talk to him, you can't be next to him. His bus. So I took a picture as close as I can get to the flip mode bus, and I got a picture of me with the bus. But you know, you can get close to Busta Rhymes, and Busta Rhymes would always perform, and this
you're
is
not
a
allowed
weekend
looking
event
at the flip mode bus.
Yeah, so I got to the flip mode bus, and not too close to the bus, because there's a lot of brothers in that bus, you know. And that was on like a 2-day span, so it was a whole weekend in Toronto where you had the day shows and then you had the night shows. It was incredible.
So it was like a festival.
Yeah, it was exactly what it was. You know, it was incredible. So So you know what? Great times under the Glamour Life and the Diamond Mines album. And then we did the actual record launch at, you remember that? Jell-O Bar?
Yeah. So, that was on Ontario.
I was on Ontario, yeah.
Yeah.
And so we did the launch at Jell-O Bar, and that was also great. And, you know, it was harder at that time, because you really had to grind it out. You know, we were still at flyers. You had to hear about it on the radio.
Yeah.
You had to push mixtapes, CDs. You had to be out there. You had to be seen. You had to get to people.
And that's in the middle. That's in the middle zone where the internet's just starting to take flight. And people are not really paying attention to this. So you really have to make it for yourself.
Absolutely.
In
it's where the whole,
get
you know,
in people's face and
You literally had to go to, you know, the record stores or the labels or the radio. And so you really had to physically always go somewhere.
Or
you
stand
had to
outside
have
an event and wait for everybody to leave and give them a flyer on the way out.
Yeah, and give them a tape or sell mix. Yeah. You know, so that was the grind. That was the hustle.
Yeah.
So, you know, we look back and think, wow, we've come a long way. And, you know, Napster was starting at that time. So it was, it's what, 20 some odd years now down the line. So it's nice to look back. So from the Diamond Mines, great, again, a great song. And in parallel to doing the Mark Echo show, because we wanted to promote the upcoming album, we came out with a mixtape called Dommage au Hip-Hop Québécois. So we wanted to take a funny and humoristic approach to this is not what we're doing. We're not sounding like any of the, you know, Quebec rap. We're a different vibe. We're a new generation. We're just coming through. New sound, new lyrics, new everything. And so we took various Canadian artists, including from Canada and Quebec. And what we did is we took their instrumentals and we remade our own songs on their instrumentals and just made them better. So of course we wanted to attract attention. We wanted to, you know, get the word out. So, you know, I also came out, I had, I think that was, yeah, that was my first shot. I had my own mixtape called The Diamond Cutter. So, that was a pretty, pretty cool piece to have. And it was a nice experience because, you know, I always remembered how people would push their own mixtapes. And I had my own. So that was pretty cool. That's nice. Yeah, that was pretty cool. So, you know, a lot of first things. And I think, again, at that time, maybe very, very little, if not maybe I was still the only female rapper at that time. Or if there were, maybe there weren't. Or they were upcoming. Or so a lot of
first. We could say established or whatever.
Yeah, like, you know, a lot of firsts. Yeah, a lot of firsts. And I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely. It's a lot to be proud of, and it's a great trajectory of, you know, like art experiences in music. Yeah. What's been going on from then until now?
So from,
'cause I feel like now you've been starting to get a little bit more active, maybe there was a time where you were not as active.
Well, again, motherhood. So, you know, there's that time in your life. Well, hey, shit happens, you know, but good things happen. It's just, it's life. And, you know, music, that's another thing. I think that if we could make a decent living off of the music we produce here and not go hungry, we would all be living off of our music here in Quebec, but that's not the situation. It was very, very difficult to eat off of being an artist back in the days because you always had to grind. And if you're not signed, then there's no money and, you know, the grants and so on and so forth. So eventually you need a plan B, C, D, E, F, G. So yeah, you got to make shit happen because rap wasn't paying bills. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you would hardly get paid for royalties. Well, depending. I can't say that about Pat Chilling because the royalties were beautiful. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying, like, in general, you know, just for the music, I mean, we didn't get paid. We didn't, we all do it for the love, of course, but we all needed to eat. So there was always that constant struggle, that constant grind. And, you know, if you weren't signed to an actual label, and there was no label at that time, really, there was no 24-hour or hip-hop radio station, so there was no foundation, there was no headquarters, mm-hmm, for hip-hop, you know, to, yeah, take a lot, because there was a lot of talent, but there was no money. Who would push us? Who's going to, you know, who's going to... like, you know, you had to be under a label's wing, or you had to, you know, there wasn't any of that. And so that's why a lot of cats decided to just be independent, just like Glamour Life. They figured, well, we're going to do everything. And we did everything ourselves. We did the music ourselves, the recording, the printing, everything came out of these guys' pockets.
Yeah. And if you're raising a family, then it's hard to find time, you know, to do the rest of stuff
when you're,
to
exactly,
really put in that time that's necessary to make a mark in the industry.
And it's all about priorities, you know, too. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to be in the studio doing, you know, microphone check 1, 2, but, you know, I got kids to feed.
Yeah.
So, you know, you make choices and then you try to balance both. And then, you know, it's not what it is anymore. You grow older, you change. And, you know, being a parent is a full-time thing. And you're not going to do a full-time thing, especially if it's not bringing you any money for you to live on.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
It is what it is, a series of choices. Had there been different alternatives, who knows? But that was it at the time. And, you know, I was becoming a nurse. I was becoming a nurse. So it's not like, you know, I just sat there and did nothing. And I did try to do a couple of songs here and there, you know. I worked a lot with Manifest. I worked a lot with, you know, several artists. You know, Dirty Taz, shout out. He's my cousin, so one love, cuz. So, you know, I did two tracks on two of his albums. I worked with Bless. And, you know, at that time with Platinumberg. So with Bless, I did the back vocals on the track Jealousy, Bless featuring Ra Digga. So that was, yeah, that was pretty, pretty awesome too. I did, I worked with Manifest, not only with my cousin Dirty Taz, but also, I think that was my first actual single when I came back from Pachiling was Money or Love with Sun Chan, Dice B's brother.
Okay.
So that was produced by Manifest, and that was really cool. And I was really still on that, you know, Pachiling vibe, but more Bahama distill. You know, I like that. I think I still pursued in that same kind of vibe because it responded very well to people, the Pachiling vibe. So, and I was always like, you know, I always like to be chill and mellow. Like, I'm a chill and mellow person. I like to spit hard, but I can do the vibe and the relaxing. And, you know, there's so many ways I could flip tracks. Mm-hmm. I guess it just goes with the beat and my mood. So, again, you know, that was it was fun to do and experience coming back slowly but surely like that. And so after that, you know, motherhood kicked in, and then, you know, I guess internet kicked in and life and just
life
in general.
No,
and,
life is the best answer. What happened? Life.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
And
it's a great answer, too, yeah. You know, because it means you take yourself seriously. You know,
I've also evolved.
Yeah.
I've also evolved as an individual. You know, I'm mom to two kids now. And my first son is like, you know, going to be 23 and my youngest is 10. But the beauty of that is I could still do music throughout with them. And then, you know, there was a couple of shows like we did Les Dix Ans du Hip Hop Québécois in 2007, which that was a very important show because that was one of the shows where what they did is they did a show with the timeline of who were the first rappers here in Quebec. So it started out with MRF. And breakdancers, and then you had Sans Pression, Dubmatic, you had Rain Men, Mazaing, and then it went down. So I was really, really very happy to be a part of that show because already then Rain Men had been considered in, you know, the first one of the first groundbreaking groups of hip-hop in Quebec, and it's been known, it's been stated, and it's so the mark, the imprint is there, and it's there to stay because year after year after year, you know, we get called back for like signature shows or like, you know, how do they call that? Like celebration, like it's the 20 years.
Yeah, it's like you're alumni and you keep getting called back to the university to be at certain events.
And it's that's a wonderful feeling. Yeah, and people remember and they still want to hear it. And it's a beautiful feeling to know that, you know, you've left something positive,
mm-hmm.
and how it's imprinted and it's had a mark positively on thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it through music. And we did it to the best of our ability. And we did it, I can definitely say, most humbly. Because, you know, we never played.
Another
we're
role.
Stars and this and that. Yeah. Mind you, you know, they wanted the limo at some point and everything. And, you know, but we did get a taste at stardom. And, you know, seeing yourself on TV, playing on the radio, having royalties and the checks come in and you're touring and you're... Not everybody has the chance to live that.
Yeah.
Not everybody has the chance to live that at such a young age.
Yeah.
As well. So we weren't prepared for all of that.
Barely 18, all of you.
Barely, yes. So and so we embraced it and we never let it get to our heads.
Yeah.
And so till this day, I love who we've become individually and I love what we've done.
And that you're keeping it alive, you know.
Yeah,
I've always wanted to see Pachiling performed, and Yeah, I got to see that at the Five Center a few weeks back, and it was a good feeling just to see that, to experience that. So,
and it's always a great vibe to, you know, reunite and catch up. And I speak to Yuri throughout the year. He's like my reference. He's a good friend. yeah, and you know, we have kids the same age, so
that's great.
Yeah, and even Max, like, you know, he lives a bit further. But there's always a, hey, what's up? There's always a communication. There's always, you know, so from that, you know, eventually, with the pandemic, I just felt I needed it. I had to go back to the source. You know, mm-hmm. I was, in university. I'm a mom, I'm a mother. Yes. But I'm also a registered nursing assistant. It's 16 years now. And, my mother was, you know, ill. She had to get operated and try to find a nurse during the pandemic, which is like impossible. And I'm also in university doing a certificate. So I just couldn't handle it. And I said, well, I'm going to have to put one thing on the shelf. It's either going to be work. I can't put being a mom on the shelf. So I said, you know what? It's kind of hard for me to work nights, two courses. So I said, you know what? I'm going to take a break from writing essays. And I think I need to write some rhymes.
It's, and I went back good for the soul.
Yeah, and I went back to the source, and I hooked up again with my girl Natty, who approached me 22 years later again and said, "Hey, I'm doing this part on Jean-Philippe Blancmanger is going to be the album, and he's a musician, and he's done this, and he's done that." And we were in studio, and we said, "You know what would be missing?" Scandal. So they just called me and I said, "Word? What? Really?" I said, "You know, I've been out of the loop for like 24 years, right?" She says, "Girl, I'm sure you still got it." So again, same thing as with Rain Man. Send me the beat. She sent me the instrumental. I started writing on it. We decided how we were going to do the outline of the song. And the song is called Girls, featuring Seymour, Natty, and me, Scandal. So it's produced by a man. However, he has, you know, you can't hear Jean-Philippe on the track. But it's got Roxanne Shanté doing the intro. And it's got a few samples of Beyoncé saying girls on the hook. And it's all women. And he dedicated the track to just us. And he said, let women take the forefront on that. So that was a beautiful way to come back. Mm. And I was very honored that they thought about me and they thought about, you know, wanting to have me back. And then from that point on, I said, hey, you know what? I've been wanting to finish what I've started and pick up where I left off with Diamond Mines, because that finished abruptly. It finished abruptly. You know, it's just, they didn't want to have to do anything with the label anymore. And we were like, yeah, but we are artists who have put our energy, sweat, time. We haven't seen a cent from this album, but we're not going to let that stop us. We still want to make music. So, you know, we offered to buy back the label, which they refused. And then, you know, everything died from there. Mm. So later down the line, came back with the single called Girls. And then I said, you know what? Let me pick up where I left off. Diamond Mines were supposed to be where I would take off with my solo career, as opposed to, you know, Rain Man. Because with Rain Man, that lasted so many years. I was an artist who was like featuring on their album, but I was still that Rain Man chick. You know, I was still Scandal from Rain Man. So I wanted to have my own voice, my own identity, in the sense that, you know, I wanted to do my own solo project. And so that was why Diamond Mines was kind of like the turning point, and it was important for me. So I picked up from there, and I came out with my single that following. So Girls came out in August. No, Girls came out in April of 2020. And I think 2020 or 20, I'm lost in the dates because, you know, with pandemic.
Yeah, yeah.
So after Girls in September, I launched my own single, Love Me or Hate Me. And I just had to do it. And it was my first shot at doing almost everything myself. I wanted to see how far I can go in terms of writing the song, the way I wanted it to sound. Shooting the video, I didn't shoot the video, but the image that I wanted to project and I wanted to create, I wanted people to see in the video the girl who became a woman from the 18-year-old Petchiling, and which is why I asked Yuri to be in the video, because for me it was the logical, it was, you know, like the next logical step. It was like the continuity.
Well, it's also the partner that you could put in the video to show that 18 and now show nowadays. Absolutely. And you could, oh, it, yeah, it's them. It is them.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? It's that's the reference point.
That's the reference. You know exactly. What I mean? So what we did is we shot it as if we were back in the 90s, and it's got that dreamy feel to it, which is exactly what we wanted, to bring you back and show you, well, this is what she's become. This is who she is. This is what happened to Scandal. So it's sort of like also my anthem, because Love Me, Hate Me is about letting people know you can love me, you can hate me, but you could never break me. Actually, the best thing you could do is make me be a better me. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm thriving for on the day to day, be the best me I can be and pass that down. So that's what was very important for me to come out with that single, and actually the video, to put the visuals. So, because, you know, I've disappeared for 22, 23 years. So a lot of people, I've never answered questions. And a lot of people throughout the times are saying, where have you been? What have you become? Why didn't you continue? So that was like the groundbreaking project that I wanted to come about and have people
get it off your chest.
You understand that was the evolution. And it's not like I didn't do anything. I'm a nurse. It's been 16 years. So 16, 23 years, I went to school. I became a professional. I became a mom. I became a scholar, went back to school. So there was a huge evolution and I grew. I grew, and so my rap grew, and so I just continued, and I came out with the second single with Nicholas Craven and Mike Schaab, which was, again, a tremendous experience, because I remember them telling me how they were listening to me. Mm-hmm. And it's what I live for today, moments like these ones, where I could sit down and reunite with the people, connect through the music, and now connect through their music. And to me, that's what it's all about. It's, there's a bigger picture. Mm-hmm. It's not just about the music. The music to me is a vehicle, but it's to bring people together and throughout our own timelines, throughout our own, stories, whether it involves music or not, but music just brings people together. It's that strength. It's that force. It's what it does. So to have the younger generation collaborate with, you know, old school, the old school and the new school, I just love it. And I was honored that, you know, I could walk through the steps and do those. I was just honored to be able to do that with them, because they're extremely talented and they're very open-minded, and they're cool, soft, sensitive cats, and it's just, they're beautiful people, and I love to see that in the younger generation. Mm-hmm. So it's very refreshing, and that was a great experience, and I made friends throughout, you know, that.
Yeah, that's,
so
that's great.
The best part too. And you know, and then I had the pleasure, the honor of hooking up with Canada's own Whitney Houston, Kim Richardson, who just happened to drop by the studio when I was recording Jesus Wept, and I had no clue what to do in terms of the chorus of the song, and we just laced the song right there. Again, the stars were aligned, and it just happened, and it's beautiful. It's one of the pieces I love because it's very different. You're not going to hear a lot of artists come out with hardcore rap on orchestra and symphony and having gospel vocals and a whole, it's just very powerful. It's just very strong as well. And I wanted to depict also a Scandal on a realistic day, where, you know, I get up and some days are harder than others, and some days I feel like I'm the devil and I need savior. And I, you know, so I wanted to have that contrast. And Kim Richardson is the voice of God. And so she replies to what I'm saying, you know, in the verses, because I start the track. And in the intro, I say, hablo con Dios para salvar mi alma, which means I speak to God to save my soul. So on the day to day, man, if I don't get up on my knees and pray to start the day, and that's what's been keeping me, I wanted to show that, you know, some days are tough, and I wanted to relate and reach out. So I you know, I say at the end of the song, ladies, I know it's hard to wake up at some days, but keep your head up to hold that crown. And, you know, it's going to be hard, but I'm here to empower you, and I'm here to you know, give you what you need and, you know, be the fuel. Because, you know, it's hard on a day to day, but I think a woman's reality is hard every day, all day. And, you know, if I can help to be the voice, help to be the strength, then why not? I feel like I've been given a gift, and, you know, I want to pass that down. I want to pass the positivity and the strength and the light, to as much as I can, you know? So,
beautiful.
It's a very, very strong piece for me. And again, I got to do it with a woman who's a pioneer in Canada's own industry. And, you know, just to put you a bit in the context, Kim Richardson's mother is an, you know, has been honored by, you know, Canada and the Legion because she was a jazz singer. And Kim Richardson is an actress. 3 Juno Awards, so she's it's very exemplary, and it's beautiful to have Black women collaborate. It's beautiful to have women collaborate together. It's beautiful for the community to come together. So it's very, very powerful. And again, Kim, I would grow up watching, you know, Kim on TV as well, and she's still doing TV, and she's actually teaching at Concordia University. So again, the evolution, you know, she's a mom, she's a grandma, she's still, that was another tremendous experience. Tremendous.
Crazy.
Tremendous. Crazy. So yeah, it's been a wonderful ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm still riding the wave.
Yeah. I see that. I see that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We talked about so much. Is there anything that you want to add that I haven't asked or that we didn't touch on?
I think we pretty much covered all the bases. One thing I would like to say, I thank you. I thank you for reaching out to me, because it gives me the possibility of finding out who you are and what you do as well for the culture, for the community. And I always try to reach out to whoever reaches out to me, because I think it takes a lot of courage to reach out, you know, to an artist, you know, period. And I think it's great what you're doing. And I look at your setup, and I fell in love with it because you brought me back in my youth, in my beginnings. And again, I am deeply moved because you did this, the cassette, the tape, and the Canadian Heritage Volume 1. Again, it brings tears to my eyes because you put so many artists in Canada. And again, you're that quilt, man. You know, this is a part of the quilt that I was talking about, that, you know, the pieces come together and you are contributing to the Canadian heritage of music, to hip hop, to the culture, to Montreal, to Quebec. So you are a bridge right now. And I commend you and I say thank you for that, because in a couple of years, we're going to look back on this beautiful piece of art. And you guys should see this, because you opened that little booklet and it's just beautifully made. It's wonderful. And it's just beautiful. It's so thank you. Thank you for contributing.
Thank you for coming through and taking the time to tell your story. You know, like, I'm really happy that you did that.
My honor, my pleasure.
I know you took the time to do it in French, and I was like, oh, you know, I know I've been bugging you for a little while, and hey. I was like, oh, finally, it's wonderful that you know, everybody can hear the other side of things, you know what I mean? Because
well,
we,
thank you.
To get the stories behind the music, I feel is really important. And it might sound corny, but you can't know where you're going unless you know where you've been. And
absolutely,
that's why I'm doing this. I'm trying to get as many interviews out there as possible.
And
you know?
I totally, totally believe in that, because you don't know where you're going till you know where you're from. And it's important for us to, you know, be more aware of who we are and where we're from and where we want to go in this point on. And I feel like, unfortunately, there's a lot of division, and we need to not just come together, everybody. And if music has to be the vehicle, then let's do this. I think we should, again, more and more tell, you know, I do think it's fun just to sit down and, you know, talk about our, you know, you must have some great stories yourself. And you're very knowledgeable. You got a lot of...
The following is a previously broadcast program.
There is this thing. Do you realize there is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news, brought to you live.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Off the Hour right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. We are 22 days into the month of September. We are broadcasting from unceded Mohawk and Anishinaabe territory. You are tuned into The Avalanche, a special presentation of CKUT's spoken word department. The Avalanche seeks to cover issues affecting those with disabilities. I'm your host, Zoe. On today's show, we have episode 30 of the Disability History Association's podcast, titled The Real Origin of Race Point Writing. All that right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. You are listening to The Avalanche, where all abilities are welcome. If you would like to get involved, you can call 514-448-4041, extension 2593, or email spokenword@ckut.ca. You can also follow us on Twitter at @avalanchecKUT.